of abdication, dated the 10th day of December instant, His former Majesty King Edward VIII did declare his irrevocable determination to renounce the throne for himself and his descendants. We therefore do now hereby, with one voice and consent of tongue and heart, publish and proclaim that the high and mighty Prince Albert Frederick Arthur George is now become our only lawful and rightful liege lord, George the Sixth, by the grace of God, of Great Britain, Ireland, and the British dominions beyond the seas, King.
And on the 12th of May, 1937, His Majesty King George the Sixth was crowned.
His Majesty is seated in King Edward's chair. The Archbishop, assisted by the other bishops, moves down from the altar. The Dean of Westminster brings the crown. The Archbishop takes it from him and lays it reverently on the King's head. The peers and the kings of arms put on their coronets. And His Majesty King George the Sixth is acclaimed.
Tonight. Never before has a newly crowned king been able to talk to all his peoples in their own homes on the day of his coronation. Never has the ceremony itself had so wider significance, for the dominions are now free and equal partners with this ancient kingdom. And I felt this morning that the whole empire was in very truth gathered within the walls of Westminster Abbey.
The quiet and reassuring voice of King George VI. But in those late 30s, another, more ominous voice was also being broadcast.
Für unseres Reiches Macht, für seine Größe und für seine Herrlichkeit, jetzt und immer, Deutschland, Sieg Heil!
So menacing were these sounds that the former king, now the Duke of Windsor, having deliberately kept out of public affairs for 2.5 years, felt impelled, while visiting the First War battlefield of Verdun, to sound a note of warning.
I speak simply as a soldier of the last war, whose most earnest prayer it is that such cruel and destructive madness shall never again overtake mankind. I break my self-imposed silence now only because of the manifest danger that we may all be drawing nearer to a repetition of the grim events which happened a quarter of a century ago.
Whatever political disagreements may have arisen in the past, the supreme importance of averting war will, I feel confident, impel all those in power to renew their endeavors to bring about a peaceful settlement.
This is the national program from London. Germany has invaded Poland and has bombed many towns.
I am speaking to you from the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently, this country is at war with Germany.
In this grave hour, perhaps the most fateful in our history, I send to every household of my people, both at home and overseas, this message, spoken with the same depth of feeling for each one of you as if I were able to cross your threshold and speak to you myself. For the second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war.
But, at home, the only immediate signs of war, apart from a false air raid alarm, were the groups of schoolchildren being evacuated from London's mainline stations.
We're on number 12 platform at Waterloo Station, one of the 10 big metropolitan stations that are engaged today on the evacuation of London's schoolchildren. They heard yesterday, somewhere about midday, that they were to evacuate. And then there was a scurry and a hurry. Mothers getting clean clothes for their children. Near the end of the week, that's not always so easy. Getting the food ready, finding them satchels, ironing frocks for the girls, getting out greatcoats that have been put away for the summer for the boys, and spending their money on choice bits of food that they could take with them when they reported this morning. Some of them reported very early at their schools, as early as 5 o'clock. And then the mothers were told that they couldn't go any further with them. None of them knew then, and none of them know now, actually where they're going to. The reason of not telling them is that with anxious parents saying goodbye to their children, they had a feeling that they might try and follow them.
What? 1 minute, the train's leaving in 1 minute, is it? Well, now, children, come on, give them a song as you go.
What about giving them the Lambeth Walk? Come on.
And on Armistice Day, 1939, Her Majesty the Queen speaks of the hardship that war brings to women.
Many of you have had to see your family life broken up. Your husband going off to his allotted task. Your children evacuated to places of greater safety. The King and I know what it means to be parted from our children. And we can sympathize with those of you who have bravely consented to this separation for the sake of your little ones.
Some of the children were sent overseas, and to them, the two young princesses, Elizabeth and Margaret Rose, sent a special message.
When peace comes, remember, it will be for us, the children of today, to make the world of tomorrow a better and happier place. My sister is by my side, and we are both going to say good night to you. Come on, Margaret.
Good night, children.
Good night, and good luck to you all.
And the King, in the first Christmas broadcast of the war, reflects some of the doubts and puzzlements of the phony war period.
A new year is at hand. We cannot tell what it will bring. If it brings a peace, how thankful we shall all be. If it brings us continued struggle, we shall remain undaunted. In the meantime, I feel that we may all find a message of encouragement in the line which, in my closing words, I would like to say to you. I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way. May that almighty hand guide and uphold us all.
Ships of all kinds have plied to and fro across the channel under the fierce onslaught of the enemy's bombers, utterly regardless of the perils, to bring out as many as possible of the trapped BEF. There was every kind of ship that I saw coming in this morning, and every one of them was crammed full of tired, battle-stained and blood-stained British soldiers. Soon after dawn this morning, I watched two warships steaming in, one listing heavily to port under the enormous load of men she carried on her decks. Transport officers counted the men as they came ashore. No question of units, no question of regiments, no question even of nationality, for there were French and Belgian soldiers who had fought side by side with the British in the Battle of Flanders. All of them were tired. Some were completely exhausted. But the most amazing thing was that practically every man was reasonably cheerful, and most of them managed a smile.
And throughout all those grim war years, the King's broadcasts gave a moving, almost Churchillian account of the progress of the war.
Time and again, during these last few months, I have seen for myself battered towns and cities of England, and I have seen the British people facing their ordeal.
Calling, Germany calling, Germany calling. Here are the Reichsender Ambush, Station Bremen and Station DXB on the 31-meter bend.
I have decided to create at once a new mark of honor for men and women in all walks of civilian life. I propose to give my name to this new distinction, which will consist of the George Cross, which will rank next to the Victoria Cross and the Georgia Medal for wider distribution. On the southern shores of the Mediterranean, the 1st and 8th armies, our fleets and air forces are advancing towards each other, heartened and greatly fortified by the timely and massive armies of the United States. Blows have been struck by the armies of the Soviet Union, the effects of which cannot yet be measured on the minds and bodies of the German people.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is a special bulletin read by John Snag. D-Day has come. Early this morning, the Allies began the assault on the northwestern face of Hitler's European fortress.
I could just see ahead of me the now fairly calm waters of the English Channel, and I'm hoping in a few minutes to get the first glimpse of our great invasion armada as they make their way to the coast of France. It's an extraordinary thing to be in this aeroplane, a tiny microcosm poised in space, looking down as history probably in a few moments will begin to unroll itself before my eyes.
4 years ago, our nation and empire stood alone against an overwhelming enemy with our backs to the wall. Once more, a supreme test has to be faced. This time, the challenge is not to fight to survive, but to fight to win the final victory for the good cause. I hope that throughout the present crisis of the liberation of Europe, there may be offered up earnest, continuous, and widespread prayer.
Thank you.
flying bomb, or doodle bug as we called the V-1, with its terrifying pause after the cutoff of the engine, before it came down and exploded.
We do not know what awaits us when we open the door of 1945. But if we look back to those earlier Christmas days of the war, we can surely say that the darkness daily grows less and less. The lamps which the Germans put out all over Europe, first in 1914 and then in 1939, are being slowly rekindled.
But there was also Hitler's other secret weapon, the V-2 rocket, which descended from the sky and exploded without any warning at all.
This is London calling. Here is a news flash. The German radio has just announced that Hitler is dead.
Now we're breaking into our programs with some splendid news from Moscow. Berlin has fallen. This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news. During the first few moments of this bulletin, the war in Europe is coming to its official end. 1 minute past midnight is the time fixed for the cessation of hostilities.
Majesty King George VI.
Today, we give thanks to Almighty God for a great deliverance. Speaking from our empire's oldest capital city, a war battered, but never for one moment daunted or dismayed. Speaking from London, I ask you to join with me in that act of thanksgiving. Germany, the enemy who drove all Europe into war, has been finally overcome.